talk to you about Independence. We just came over Independence Day, or freedom, actually, as the biblical concept in terms of what we are and who we are. We've sort of been working on that angle. We discussed our situation as a building that is more than just a building. It's a living kind of thing. We are a building, but a living building. Now, how can you have a living building? Because life is germane to the universe God made. The difference between organic and inorganic may sometimes be less than we imagine. So that the atoms that make up inorganic matter are the same as the atoms that make up life. But they're in different arrangement, different relationship, so forth. The atoms that God took to make humans was inorganic matter, the dust of the earth. On the other hand, inorganic matter was ordered to reproduce. The earth gave forth life, right? Remember that? Earth out of Genesis 1? Very difficult to really put together with human minds the whole impact of the distinction between organic and inorganic, between matter and life. The question again, what are we? Of course, the scripture says, dust thou art, to dust returnest. I wouldn't want to say we were a bunch of mud hens, but mud roosters and mud hens, I don't know. The vitality that connects us with deity is a sketchy thing, a very mysterious thing, as to how does a particle of matter really focus in on God. When you see yourself as a particle of matter, then you ask yourself, where are my freedoms? Freedom to do what? Freedom to be a particle of matter. In conjunction with other particles of matter. When you're conjoined integrally with the universe, with life and matter in the universe, then you come down to the vitality of interaction of lives on a social basis, social order. You have to realize that freedom is a, well, I wouldn't want to say limited thing, but it's qualified. Freedom is always qualified. And that has a lot to do with family life and with political life, with church life or religious life, church in the ecclesia sense. So when you visualize or recognize the self as an ionized particle of matter, which received life from the Spirit of God and came forth out of dust, substance of which is no different than the substance of the stars in the heavens. You see yourself in that connection, and you realize that you can never be independent of God, actually. People like to think they're independent of God. If they don't think God, he won't be there. Important point. We'll just ignore God, and we'll have our own life apart from God. We don't need him. Strange to think that way. Because theoretically, you can't take a breath without God. Especially in the Christian sense. Once you identify yourself or are attached to the trunk of the tree, to the branch, to the vine as a branch. As a branch coming off the vine, you are totally dependent upon the sap that flows up through the cambium layer into the branch. That branch has nothing apart from the vine. And Jesus goes on to say that, without me you can do nothing. That doesn't mean you have to always be religious about everything, or spiritual as we may call it, but just recognizing that you're identified with Christ, your life comes from Him, and you can't move without Him. That may seem strange to you. You think you're free and independent. And what I'm saying to you is, you know, in terms of the work, let's say, what we're doing in our service for Christ, you're not going to move if He doesn't let you move. And He's going to, and an old scratch is going to hit you. Paul said that I would have come unto you once and again, but Satan hindered me. So apparently the Lord let Satan hinder him. And you say, why would He do that? Why wouldn't He let him just go hell-bent for leather to get the work done? I think the average approach in the church, with all due kindness and respect and graciousness, I have to say that the fundamental point seems to be to expand the work. Whether you're talking about a church, or you're talking about a radio or television ministry, whatever it is. Expansion. Development. If you're not developing at least 10% or more, you're not doing a job. What's wrong? So the board gets together to determine what's wrong. Expansion. Growth. But growth through programming and motivation, rather than through whatever the Spirit wants us to do in a given fellowship, a given circle. You have to realize that without Christ in the work, what you do may be outwardly promising or visible, but what is it that the Lord Himself wants done with whatever individual? Just in your own lives, you know, where shall we go? What shall we do? What are we all about? You have a job decision to make. Well, what are we going to do? What is our purpose on earth? What does the Lord want out of our lives? And the bottom line is, whatever He wants, He's going to guess. You know, whatever you do to kick around and fuss, unless you have an adamancy that says, I'm not going to do it. You know, if you're in the Lord's hands, which you are not by supernatural commitments or superstar performance, you're in the Lord's hand just because you want to be in His hand. And you may go a rocky road. And you're not going to make it if you're trusting your own strength. You can't do this to me, Satan, because I trust in Jesus. Well, not always all that strong to Him. He doesn't think about that. You may be trusting Jesus in the flesh, but the only one that's going to handle Satan is Christ. Not because you feel good about Him, but because He's there. And not because you get yourself psyched up or prayed up or whatever, but because you have put yourself in His hands, that you can do. The Lord doesn't do that for everybody willy-nilly. If you put yourself in His hands, you may not always like what He does or allows in your life. But you're in His hands, and you just may not feel good about something, but you're in His hands, and He's going to see to it that whatever He wants is going to happen. Now, that seems like a very laissez-faire way to look at things, but if you are an ionized particle in the universe, what other hope have you got? What are you going to build for him spiritually? I think the lessons of nuclear fission and nuclear fusion give us some very strong indicators of the nature of the energy and power of God. Now, how do you use this in terms of your relationship to people? What is the glue that keeps people together? And it's, in a way, the same glue that keeps you together with Christ, and that is openness. The Greek word prothēs, that some of you have encountered, which is translated meekness in some versions, really means openness to God and man. You can be open to people without necessarily letting them walk all over you. There's a balance there. One thing for them to walk on you, it's another thing for them to paint a white stripe down your back and go both ways, you know. Then it gets bad. What you ought to do in relation to other people, that's a very complex question, but fundamentally there is an openness to people, especially to your brothers and sisters in Christ and to your family members. Which really means not insisting on having our own way. That's true with Christ and with people. If you don't insist on having your own way, and you are willing to modulate, to work together, you may not always feel happy about the ultimate outcome, but you are at least in a moderate phase or mode when you work together with people. But the big thing is not what do I want, but what is best for the group or for the family or for the other party, as well as for myself. Prothēs, meekness, really means openness, and that's how we relate to Christ, openness to what he wants. Not dictating it, not saying, I'm going to do this or that, but not even taking the lowly road. It's just being open to Christ and then open to one another to take what he gives us, to go with it. He will find a way to get us through it. In grace, which the Lord has to give us to get through the day, you know, my constant prayer is, Lord, see that whatever you want happens today. The grace of Christ does not necessarily provide you with a mellow attitude. The grace of Christ gets you through the problem. The grace of Christ holds you in spite of not a mellow attitude. You may not be a happy camper. Maybe this last week you were not a happy camper. Why did the Lord allow this to happen on our vacation? That's life, and it's a struggle, and you struggle all the way through. I had a fellow, at one point, I don't think I better identify the city, but came up to me after the meeting. He said, well, you always tell us about these struggles, but can't we be happy and love the Lord and so forth? I said, well, you know, lots of luck. Jump up and down. I'm just trying to help you get through this life, which doesn't always make you happy. But shouldn't people be happy in Jesus? Well, the Bible doesn't say you should be. It says, rejoice in the Lord. You can rejoice in the Lord even though you don't rejoice in your life. But deep down inside, you can have a peace that whatever is going on, you're in the hands of Christ. And you may not feel great about it, but you're making it. When you get through the day where it's been rocky and rough, and you come to the end of the day and you still talk to the Lord, you've made it. And even if you don't talk to the Lord, His grace has probably carried you through. You get battered around a lot. In the end, you make it through. You know Christ is holding you steady. But always, whatever you do, and you can be as aggressive as you want to be, but always, whatever you're doing to handle your problems, always with the understanding, and in the end, you're just an ionized particle, and the Spirit of Christ has got to energize you to do whatever He's going to do in your life, and has to kind of get circumstances together. That you can be open to Christ, but also open to one another. Because people also have, other people outside of you have problems too. So you don't know what they're carrying in their saddlebags. They may be carrying a lot of problems you don't know anything about. You can't understand why they're so cranky or ornery or whatever. But they may have problems. They may have a thorn in their shoe or something. So you just be open to them. You don't always like the way people act, but you are open to them. You don't run out of the fellowship because somebody is saying something unkind. Just openness to God and man. But that eliminates the word in a way. It eliminates the word freedom. Freedom is not independence, ever. Freedom derives out of the society of which one's a member. No way to cut it in any other way. Just remember, in the last analysis, you might as well forget the word freedom. Especially as relates to God, where you are a particle under His energizing process. Do the best you can, and you'll always be more or less human. There'll always be strife and divisions among the believers. Always. I don't care how spiritual you are, how much you talk in tongues or whatever else, there's always going to be strife among the believers. Especially if you're super spiritual. And you'll be striving with the people that aren't as spiritual as you are. Paul said that. He said, because there are divisions and strifes among you, are you not human? See, the text is mishandled there, where it says, are you not carnal and walk as men? And the thing is, well, we mustn't be carnal, so we'll have to get rid of the strife. No, he's just saying you're human. You're human. Fleshly. So strife and divisions are part of the human scene. You just, the more you can modulate by being open to people around you and to God and to society and try to work with people, try to, especially in the home situation, give and take, working together, not demanding your own way. Had to deal with a situation where the person's very upset with the parents, but this person was causing all the trouble. Why can't they get along? Because you're there, that's why. Think about this in terms of freedom. Freedom is a myth where you are involved with society, and it's a myth where there is no society, because then you're the victim of whatever physical forces are around, like earthquakes, so forth. You're not free. One of the classic lines in Les Miserables, Victor Hugo, one of the great lines of literature in my book, Jean Valjean, who was the ex-convict, was taken in by a priest, given food and shelter. As he was leaving the next day, he stole a couple of candles, silver candlesticks, took off with them, and the gendarmes brought him back for charges to be made, and the bishop said, well, you misunderstood him. Yes, I gave him the candlesticks. A moment of great enlightenment, he turned the situation around, and the fellow said, and the gendarmes left, and the fellow said to him, Jean Valjean said to the priest, to the bishop, I can go? You mean I'm free? And the bishop said, when is a man ever free? When are you ever free? don't make too big a deal out of whether you're free or not. We are hostage to the world these days in the United States. In a sense, we're free. I don't mean to discredit what we purchased with a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, but personally, on a personal level, you better modify your ideas about freedom. In a certain sense, this kind of thing is very much like the meetings that were held in the early church, although I'm not trying to get back to that. I'm not sure we'd be very disappointed if we did. If you could be flashed back to the early church, you might wish you were flashed up to the later church. I think this sort of a free-floating situation is more in keeping with the spirit of relatedness to Christ than the pontificating. Well, I could stand up here and pontificate, you see. It means come out with decrees and decretals. I think it's a family. I keep more and more sensing the family thing here, and my task is to share things with you. I'm not here to keep you theologically up in the harness or anything. I don't want to make theologians out of you. You've been through all the schooling and you know all that goes on in theological schools, all the hassling and all the debate and the rest of it. You're glad to just sort of abandon it and say, let's talk about Christ and talk about our life. Our attempt is to extract, as you know, extract from these books of the Bible or these letters pragmatic ideas or instruction that are vital and viable to our relationship to Christ, whereas the approach to books of the Bible is so often systematized. The first thing they want to get is an outline. And I'm not sure Paul ever wanted anybody to outline his letters. I'm not sure you'd want somebody to outline your letters. I think we break the mold of being religious and formalistic, which tends to obscure the vitality of it. You can get a lot of theological ideas, and yet the vitality of the message is obscured by the regimentation. I go into a lot of things here that would not be part of your formalistic sermon. I wouldn't be a good sermonizer. I gave up sermonizing 30, 40 years ago. Because all sermons do is give you opportunity to think about what you're going to have for dinner. That kind of flexibility and casualness does not go over well in all circles. Now, I had started down the line of developing a little bit this whole theme of who am I and what we are to God. I'm not intending to just make a long series out of that. And I want to get into Ephesians again because it's been a long time since we did it. Nevertheless, I want to impress on your minds the answer to the fundamental question of who am I? You ought to know that if you're going to be at peace about your life, about the world, about things around you. Certainly not a peaceful time in the world, and yet there's a lot of peace in the world. Now, what does all this mean to you? It means that the world that we are living in is a world rocked with torments. Our nation is rocked with torment, with all the special interest groups marching and shouting and screaming and so forth. And the political parties are all but decimated in the sense that you've got a loose cannon out there rolling around the deck. But what are we as Christians doing, or what are we going to do, or what is our position in this world? Is why you have to ask this question. Even though it may seem to you like a history lesson you don't want to follow, but I want us to understand that the cessation of hostilities in the war with only a few brush fires here and there, does not give us a whole lot of security. And doesn't give us any basis for analyzing the world scene. How are you going to analyze it? Now, we are, on the other hand, you can remember that we are these little ionized particles out there in space, and you have to ask, what do we know about anything? But we have been fundamentally given the place on the earth of vines and branches, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and potter and clay, were vessels being molded by the potter. That's an analogy we can take to ourselves because it's repeated in the New Testament, and the idea of being molded and shaped by God. So if you are a ewer with two ears or a mug or whatever, that's whatever it is that you were supposed to be. You may be a ewer with two ears. That's a big pitcher that has two big ears on it, if you want to know what that is. Whatever you are, a vase to hold flowers in or something to draw water with or whatever, is what you are. Then we have the sheep and the shepherd thing, which is that we are a bunch of dumb sheep. Now, you may not like that appellation. But what are going to sheep do? When you pass a pasture, you don't find the sheep out there pulling, not even pulling kiddies' carts. You might find goats doing that. I never saw a sheep pulling a cart, did you? I've seen goats pulling carts, but not sheep. But they just sit there and go fat. Now, you don't want to go fat, but I mean, they just eat the grass and grow wool, and they don't do much of anything, and they sleep most of the time, I guess. But you have to look at the analogy. See, when we want to be great souls and do great things for God and be wonderful people, and you people like to associate with wonderful people, you can't pick your people. It'd be nice to find a nice, sophisticated group that you can get together with. Now, you can go over to some churches. I won't mention any names. And you'll find a more sophisticated group, you know, and they're all relatively successful and affluent and whatever else. And it might be nice to rub elbows or shoulders with the upper crust, the elitists. But you can't do that. You are, in the Lord's view, He has a spot for you, a place that you feel comfortable. That's the only reason I know that it's a spot He has for you. Because you can feel comfortable there. The fundamental point of this whole thing is that you are what you are by the hand of God. If you are open to that, if you decide you do not want to be a ewer and you knock off one of your ears so you can pass for something else, that's the thing. You know, you want to be something else other than you are, so you reshape yourself. Remember the story of Dinky Duck? I gave that some time ago. It was one of a nursery rhymes that our family had. I don't know if any of them, we only have one of them here this morning. Do you remember Dinky Duck, Lynn? Okay. Now, the story of Dinky Duck was that he saw himself reflected in the water. So I remember the story. She'll have to correct me if I'm wrong. And he didn't like the way he looked. Sort of the ugly duckling. So he went around trying to find someone to help him do better. So he came across this artist. And he said, "The trouble with you is you look like a bottle to me. But I will fix that." So he starts pounding on him and shaping everything. No, I think he said, "I'll fix that. I know you don't look very good, but I'll fix that." So he pounded and shaped, and all of a sudden he got through and he says, "Oh, you look like a bottle to me." Now, if you don't want to be Dinky Duck and you want to look like a bottle, you can let people shape you up. but if you just ask the Lord to do with you whatever he wants to do and to open up the doors that he wants to open and bring you through the mill. When he's using you to fit in with the body of believers. And he has you here because this is where you fit in with the body of believers. You may not be the kind that will fit in well with some other groups. But anyway, the point is that we've been going over what you are, and what you are is nothing. Now, people talk about that religiously. Oh, I just want to be nothing for Christ. So what can you be if you're a particle in the universe? You're nothing. But the Spirit working in you can fit you into the body where he wants. You just be at peace about it. Don't go out there trying to be something that you are. In spite of certain churches that try to press that on you. So one thing here, you can be what you are. You can come in T-shirts, and you can come in jeans and cut-offs and whatever else you want to come in. Nobody ever says anything about that. And in fact, I think I told you, we used to have a dog that came to church every Sunday. A couple down in Malibu used to bring their dog. That's all they had. They didn't have any children, so they had this dog, and they loved the dog dearly. It was a big dog, like an Afghan or a wolfhound or something. And he used to sit in their convertible, and they would come barreling up here from Malibu. And, very sophisticated. Was he a sheepdog? Oh, okay. I'm glad you're correct. So he would come in and lie down in the back of the chairs, never made any fuss, never bothered anybody. And so here was this dog that came to church. Well, anybody can come to this church if they want to. And the point that you may be just a neuron, not a moron, a neuron of a micron or two in length, and yet you are perform an extremely important function that you may not know at all. You're a small part there. Now, how can I say you're small? Well, my gosh, if you're an ionized particle, you've got to be small. So you do what you have to do. The Lord lets some of his people become affluent. I have no problem with that. And some are defluent. Some are divested of their financial stability. And, things move along like that, but there's nothing wrong with going to work and getting yourself in a good position, going to school, learning a trade, learning a profession and following it. I'm not saying just to sit on the couch and wait for the Lord to do something with you. But along the way, you have to see that he puts you where you ought to be, here and there, and by one means or another. Remember, I've always said, and I'm going to repeat it, not grace to be nice, but grace that carries you in spite of the fact you may not be nice. You know, people get out of sorts when things go bad. And they may feel a little negative about Christ. I have known some people even to utter an oath, an ungracious word, when they were out of sorts with Christ. But his grace, you see, carries you across that. You act as a human. You're not one of the nicey-nice types. They don't last too long here, so most of you can't be there because you lasted a while. But you know what I'm talking about. The people that are nasty nice, and they always have this smile on their face till they get out of sight, and then they growl at God. But you can come and feel bad if you want to. Listen to the message. You don't even have to sing. Larry doesn't point you out and say, how come you're not singing? There are churches that do that. They want everybody to sing. I think it's a big mistake. Not everybody can sing. Well, I was going to go into Ephesians a little longer this morning, but it's not what we got.